eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease and a whole lot of love, you transform 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. LED headlights, spoilers, whatever you need. eBay Motors has it at affordable prices. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride every time. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Life is a highway. And on it, there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Jet Lawrence sees the Red Cross flag. That was a massive T-bone. Levi Kitchen, dominant in St. Louis. Eli Tomac back on top.
Welcome to Title 24, presented by NBC Sports. I'm Ricky Carmichael. Got Ryan Villopoto on there, my awesome co-host. And we have got an epic show for you tonight. A lot to peel back from what happened this past weekend in St. Louis, RV. Massive thanks to United Motorsports, Quad Lock Case, Dunlop Tires, and Boxo USA for all your guys' support. Everyone does a fabulous job. And, man, thanks for enjoying the ride with us. But we got a special guest today on today's show, bringing the chef, Levi Kitchen, in a little later in the show after we are done doing our 450 recap. And right off the top, RV, it was a heck of a night.
Yes,
it was. Dude, a heck of a night. A lot to talk about. But first thing is the man got it done. Eli Tomac, just an incredible ride. Just before we go to sound on tape, what did you think? Did you like what you saw from him? Go for it, dude.
Yeah, no, I think he looked like the old Eli, right? He had good sprint speed. He was riding phenomenal. He might not have been the fastest guy on the track, but he put himself in great race position. And obviously, as we know, there was a bunch of controversy around that Red Cross flag. So in the end, he ended up going 1-1-1 in that Triple Crown. So I think that was a huge weekend for him. He also talked about nursing an ankle injury. Not sure if that was the ankle that his Achilles tendon was tore on or if it was the other one. Regardless, he exposed that, talking about that injury and just being off the pace, essentially. So I thought, you know, Saturday night he rode I'd say that was probably his best of the year so far. He definitely looked like he was coming around, and it might be a little too late, but here he's getting, you know, he got that 1-1-1 finish and that overall on the night.
Hey, I would like to know your opinion of this. I talked about it on the broadcast a little bit. When he was behind Jet in the second moto or second race, do you feel like, explain your side and what maybe you thought from that ride from a learning perspective. Do you think that that helped him and will help him moving forward the rest of the season? What do you think he learned, or do you not think he learned anything?
Well, I think he for sure learned where Jet is creative at. And also I think the straightaway speed that Jet has pushing through the rhythm sections, he's just got a little bit more speed, sprint, explosiveness compared to some of these other guys. So I think for a guy like Eli to be able to sit back and watch and be like, oh, he's a little bit quicker here, he's a little bit quicker there. I think a lot of times it's just being able to watch, not that he needs to do anything different, not that he's got to change anything with himself or on the motorcycle, but just seeing visually, being able to see where somebody's faster than you is huge. Because I think that, when you're pushing the limits like these guys are, the track's deteriorating, you have to have something to gauge off of. Maybe he thought he was pushing as hard as he could. And then now he's like, okay, dude, I'm watching Jet, a couple different lines here, a couple different lines there, and maybe I can bridge that gap. So yes, I think it was from the learning standpoint, I think the learning came from just being able to watch Jet and see where he was actually quicker than him, because he hasn't been able to ride behind him for very long. In the past,
would you say it's a that was a pivotal moment, not only for the night, but for what to look forward to for the rest of the season. And if he races again next season, do you think
I think the night was a very pivotal night from as a whole. Obviously, we go into, we'll dissect the Justin Barcia and the Jet Lawrence collision. But as a whole, I think it was a big night for all of those guys. I know Eli's still quite a ways out of the points, but now Jet only sits 8. So, you know, it's like you can smell blood in the water. You can see blood in the water. Right here we have Cooper Webb 8 points down, Chase Sexton 20, and Eli 29. So Chase and Eli being 20 and 29 points out, that's starting to become a really big gap to close up when this series is starting to close out. I do think that these riders, especially Coop, but those top, you know, 4 or 5 riders, they can see the blood in the water. Even though it was a mishap that wasn't caused by Jet per se. You know, so yes, I think we're looking to see some good things coming up for these last few rounds.
You talk about that ankle injury, and we have Eli. Let's hear it from the man himself about that ankle injury and how the night went.
I was in a bit of a rough patch, you know, these last few weeks, bit of a slump there, and struggling with a lot of things, a little bit of my body, a little bit of just overall riding on the track there. So tonight was old me, you know, I just was able to execute everything that I needed to do, you know, starts, just riding and qualifying and all the above. So this was big for us. I didn't like where I was finishing, I'll tell you that, before this weekend. I was just struggling straight up. So and the last the real story is I tweaked my ankle like three weeks ago, and I haven't been able to balance right either. So tonight that finally came around too, and my balance is back. So maybe it was some of that, a little bit of the soft conditions, and it honestly made it worse kind of limping around.
That silly rascal, dude. I'm gonna have to get after him.
You started this whole thing of keeping everything secret. Don't show the training. Don't show what we're doing. Don't expose any injuries. You know, like, and like you said, to your point, he's like, hey, if I don't know, I don't know if these riders have an injury or a naggingness or whatever the case may be. And if you don't say it, then when you're up on the broadcast, you're like, hey, man, he just has he's having a terrible night. He's off. Right. Look back, you can see he exposed it. He said he's been dealing with an ankle injury for 3 weeks. So I get it. He's trying to, you know, keep that stuff under wraps. I don't know if in his position, being in the points position that he sits in, if it's necessarily needed to keep that secret. I think his fans and everybody would respect. You would definitely appreciate that, but respect hearing that, yeah, he is dealing with an injury. I mean, like I said, he didn't expose what leg it was. And he said he had balance issues. So I'm kind of assuming it is the Achilles ankle potentially. Right. And if that's the case, like, dude, these tracks have been gnarly. Seattle was gnarly. You know, St. Louis got pretty beat up too. So to ride in those conditions with a bum ankle, it can't be easy.
No. Dang it. So now I feel bad over the last few weeks, just kind of like, you know, I haven't been hard on him, but I haven't given him the credit that probably he deserves, man.
You can't feel bad because you're calling it, I'm calling it, is how we see it. Until you get that information out there like he just did, like, it is what it is, you know?
Yeah, I like that. I like that win. I'm pumped for Eli. All the Eli Tomac fans got to be stoked. Comes at a great time. And then going back to that second race, I do think it was pivotal as well. We talked about it. You know, guys at Eli's level and like yourself, you probably go back in time and riding behind certain people. RV, you're like, okay, now I've learned the speed. I know where he's getting me. I can make the adjustment. I can work on it at home, or I need my bike to be a little bit better in these areas to help me match those speeds in said situations, like what we're watching there through the rhythm lanes. So I think it was an important race. I think he's going to build on this. Sounds like he's healthy, like he just told us. And, you knew that that win was coming, so I'm pumped for it. I'm with you, like, as from a points perspective, it's a ways out there. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a stretch. He's going to need some luck. Number one, he's going to need some luck from Jet, but also Coop. And even though Coop was he was second overall, RV, he was sneaky fast. He wasn't in the right places at the right time, but dude, he found a way to be up there at the end, and he had good speed. He passed a lot of guys. When you think about just how he earned this position, it wasn't easy. So you guys keep your eyes on him. One thing I want to talk about, and I want to get your opinion. I personally thought it was an epic track, and the reason, and I put some notes down, the reason that I thought it was, I loved those little inside lines, and I know that the dirt probably helped it also, was the reason that this track raced so well, but I love those inside lines, how they had the little nuggets there. So throughout time, those inside ruts got really choppy and deeper. You couldn't go as faster there, so it forced guys to go to the outside, and then that right-hander right before the triple, you remember the 180s, the back and forth, and then you turn right, how you could go outside and triple and hit the stadium triple. I loved that. I just thought it was a great racetrack. Yes, it was because of the dirt, but also I feel like the SMX track crew did a great job at creating options. Did you like the racetrack? Did you feel like it was multi-groove because of that?
It was the speeds were a little bit higher. The track was more racy. There was multiple lines and options that, there wasn't one specific line that was like, hey, this is way faster. You saw multiple combinations in the rhythm sections too, which was nice to see. No, the track, they did a good job to your point on the track. It was very racy. It was one, like I said, one of the higher speed tracks that we were able to, that they've raced this year. And I think that's also why you were able to see some really good battles kind of all the way through the field, because it didn't deteriorate so bad. They weren't just trying to survive and make it around the track at a high level, at a high pace. They were able to move around on the track and really scrub those jumps and come into turns, open it up on the inside, have multiple options out there. So we haven't had a track like that in maybe this year yet. So it was really, really good to see the speeds that were up there, the passing, the racing that track promoted.
It'll be good when we have Levi on a little bit later. We can ask him about the tracks. And unfortunately for him, he's, dude, you think of San Diego, you think of San Fran. And other than the two Anaheims, he's been in some kind of crappy condition. So it'll be interesting to see what Levi has to say there. All right, that's enough for Cooper Webb. We'll talk a little bit about Hunter Lawrence and later in the show. He chimes in on our quad lock question of the week. He doesn't win the quad lock question of the week, but he has a hell of a point that we're going to have a great time with that. Moving along, United Motorsports moment of the night. If you haven't yet, go to unitedmotorsports.com. Check them out. Remember that initial sign up, you'll get $15 credit. And then United Motorsports will be picking out a lucky winner each week to give a $50 credit. So if you sign up first, you're eligible for a possible $75 total. There you can scan that QR code there if you're watching. And if you're listening to Title 24, go to www.unitedmotorsports.com/Title24. And it is the United Motorsports moment of the night. Is definitely the Jet Lawrence and Justin Barcia collision. Race three. I just want to know your thoughts, RV. I'm not even going to tee you up.
Yeah.
You're a professional. You're one of the best in the business. Give us your take.
Yeah. The ones that are watching, we're going to replay this thing right now. It's in slow-mo, but obviously everybody got to see on the broadcast, and we're rewatching it again. You can see right there as Justin comes in, he's on the binders hard. He's in a nose wheelie, and then he connects with Jet. The way I look at it, the way I see it, I don't think Justin went in there to T-bone Jet. I don't think that. We made a point of talking about those S turns across the start straight where the disc is. Once we bring the video back up, the replay, there is a round disc on the ground that is right there to the left, right there. Yep. Stop right there. So you can see Justin coming in. So that disc right there, if you look the gap between that disc and the Rocky Mountain ATV on the right, as you can see, up kind of where Jet's at that side. That was a very, very huge entrance, big opening to that turn. And as you can see, also you have Vince Freeze right behind Justin. So we all know how Vince rides. We all
play it forward a little bit, Aaron. Yeah. Right, look how close Vince was.
Exactly. Like, that being said, you know, I do say it's Justin's fault, meaning he wasn't aware of in front of him. He was, I think, too aware and putting too much emphasis on protecting the inside from Vince, which you kind of have to. But, you know, the speeds these riders are going, you know, that's where the awareness comes in. And you know, I'll be honest, I don't know. Justin isn't probably the most aware rider out there. He seems to get himself into a lot of these sort of issues. But that being said, I don't think he was doing that. I know he wasn't doing that on purpose.
He wasn't.
It was a racing incident. But in a scenario like that, first lap, you have to be able to know everything that's around you. So it was just a bad combination, and it worked out to be the perfect storm, you know, and catching Jet in a T-bone.
Let me ask you this. Do you put any fault or blame on Jet?
So I do think that as Jet coming into that turn too, being more of aware of who's behind you, how close they are behind you, especially on those first laps. So that's why I said it's really nobody's fault. I think that Jet being as talented and being able to move and put that motorcycle wherever he wants and being able to turn down super tight like he did, Justin wasn't aware of that, you know. So yes, I think he could have held it up a little bit more and dropped in behind Hunter and been able to come out and probably avoided that. So it was a perfect storm, to be honest. It was really nobody's fault. They both should have been more aware of their surroundings.
Yeah. For the record, so it was super uncomfortable. I felt really bad for Justin Barsha. We were talking about this before we got going on the show and we hit record. But I was telling RV and our production crew, I flew home. I was on the same flight as Barsha, and we happened, like, the seating assignment. We sat next to each other, and at the same time, all of the factory HRC Honda team was on our flight, basically surrounding us as well, which it was no skin. Like, it makes no difference to me. I'm not racing, but I felt bad for
you. Could
for
cut Justin. The air on the plane with a butter knife.
Yeah, oh, dude, it was thick. It was definitely thick, but. So I had a nice conversation with Justin, and I really didn't like ask him why, because he was already getting beat up. When I was walking to the gate in the airport, he was already, I could hear him explaining himself and the situation and what happened. And it's probably the last thing that he wanted to do. And by this time, he's probably already explained it a million times. Mm-hmm. But I think he told Jet, this isn't verbatim, I'm just giving you guys cliff notes, that he apologized. He in no way, shape, or form meant to do that, and that he was trying to block Vince, exactly like what you said there, RV, and that he was sick to his stomach. He went over to the Honda rig, tried to apologize, went to the AMA straight after the race too, and like say, hey, dude, that was a complete accident. And dude, he was super, he was affected by it. You can tell. He's just, I felt bad for him, because he knew he was going to probably get hammered by the keyboard warriors. And he was super sorry. He's like, and it was me. I've been trying to be better about this stuff this year. And I think that he has been. Has there been times where he's gone bam bam on some people? Of course he has. But overall, I do feel like he's been better and has made less aggressive moves. I stand by what I say there. Yeah. So it sucks. I want to roll that tape again. And I just want to share this for the people who tune into Title 24, and we're going to get what you say on this as well. Aaron, roll that tape and freeze it right where we were. Right there, freeze it. Okay.
Yep.
So we're watching this. And Ryan, like you said, that disc on the inside, that's like the track marker. Yeah. You have to go around that disc and look at how wide that corner entry is right there. So automatically, these guys are going to take a wide entry for the most part, especially if you're solo, to turn down. Don't turn it just yet. Don't hit play just yet. They'll turn down automatically because they take a wider exit,
entry, yep.
Right? Wider entry. Nothing wrong with that. In all reality, if that disc is moved to our right, as we're looking at the screen, it changes the complexity and the apex of this corner and the entry completely. I think that it definitely is more to the left than what it needs to be, but these guys are racers. They need to be aware of, you know, where the markers are at and adjust their lines accordingly. But I'm going to make a case for Justin Barcia here. And I just want you guys to hear me out with an open mind. If you're Justin Barcia, when you see this right here, you're thinking, okay, I'm blocking Vince. We know what Vince is capable of doing and what he has a history of doing. I'm going to block him. And it's early in the race, and there's no way that Jet is going to turn down because it's so early in the race. And there's been a lot of people placing some blame on Jet that he turned down too early in a race like this. You can't do that. Mm-hmm. So if you're looking from this perspective, RV, I'm thinking, okay, I'm good. Maybe he does still hit Jet, or maybe he just misses him by just a skosh.
Yeah.
Hard to tell. Not going to speculate. But for all intents and purposes, let's just say he rolls through the corner and follows his brother through there.
Yeah.
Probably doesn't make impact, and he carries on. So if I'm taking up for Justin in this scenario. You're thinking everything's good. What do you see from this? This angle.
I think, like you said, if number one, if that disc would have been moved over, say 12 to 14 inches, that's going to drastically change. It's not going to change Jet's trajectory and entry of the turn because Jet opened it up, but it's going to move Justin over that 12 to 14, you know, inches, 2 feet potentially, depending on where that disc is moved to the right. Now it's mm-hmm. not. This disc has been out there. They rode practice. That's where it's been set. It's been there for the day. So everybody should have known it. They already knew how open that turn was. But in theory, if that would have been open, pushed over to the right, now Barcia's line has to be completely moved over those 12 to 24 inches. And it's going to change where Justin's coming into the turn. And then at that point, he's probably not going to connect with Jet. So the other option is Jet, if he didn't turn down on lap one like that of a main event, and he more followed his brother. See, right there, he turns down. I mean, he's 3-4 feet Ooh. Inside of Hunter, right? Look how far he is. You can see Hunter's roost line. And then, so if he would have opened that up a little bit, then that's another scenario where...
Look, go back. Go back a little bit more. Go back a little bit more, and I like, okay, right there is where Justin's rear tire goes up.
Yep.
I think that's where he realized, oh crap.
Yes. Yeah, he did. No, 100%. We have the slow-mo footage of it, and where he was nose wheeling into, it was just to right there. You can see the rear tire is off the ground right here as he's
so
coming.
Is that where he, do you think that's where JB said, oh crap, he's
going to, I mean, he said, oh crap, too late. That's why he ended up hitting the back of, you know, T-boning him.
Yeah.
you know, I think that, you know, he could have held it in and gone in slower and then obviously just kept Vince behind him, but he come blasting into that and wasn't aware of Jet turning down that tight. So, and they come together gnarly. They came together really, really, really hard. You know, I think for your average person, you know, Jet's no small dude. If anybody that's ever stood next to the guy, I stand about 5'8". He's almost close. He's got to be 5'11" ish, you know, big boy, you know? So, the dude gets hit hard. And, but that being said, yeah, it was just a crummy situation for both parties to be in. You know, Jet also, basically, you know, DNF'd that third main event. Now he's only 8 points ahead, you know, so there's a lot of things that came, came to fruition after all of that, after the dust had settled. But to the point of what we're talking about in this whole scenario is, I don't think, like, it wasn't Justin going in for a typical takeout or, you know, him riding dirty. It was just a bad scenario that got worse when Jet turned down.
Yep, it did. I saw a lot of people. I mean, I a lot of people saying, and I got some texts from a couple riders saying, oh, I think Jet turned in a little too early in the race. And definitely you have to be mindful of that for sure. You know that, RV. And exactly what you said, it was perfect storm. You know, if you're a Justin Barcia fan, you're going to think it was Jet's fault.
Yeah.
If you're a Jet fan, you're going to think it's Barcia's fault. And I can tell you this much, that Barcia is super bummed and he's upset about it. You could see it. He was emotional about it. He wasn't crying or anything in the airplane, but dude, he was bummed, and he's meaningful when he's saying, I didn't mean to do it. And I believe him.
Well,
it was perfect.
At that speed too, you know, like nobody goes in to hit somebody at that speed, no matter who, I don't care who you are. If you're Tyler Evans, if you're Justin Barcia, if you're Mike LaRocco, any of those guys that rode like that in the past, or currently, like, yeah, it riding dirt, riding tough and riding hard and coming in and giving somebody the elbow grease. Justin's famous for that and he's good at it, but that right there wasn't one of those scenarios.
So I posted, so same thing, like people are going to beat him up. So I posted something on my Instagram yesterday of Stu and Dunge. Yep. I can't even remember what year that was. And it's almost identical, not identical, but damn near close to identical.
Yep.
I mean, so whose fault was that?
Yep.
You know, like, did Stu turn down too early? Did Dunge take too? Was he? I mean, Dunge was basically the same angle as JP was, right?
Exactly. Yep. Yep. We both posted that. And that was one of those scenarios. I remember that scenario there, James cutting down really hard also, but also Dunge coming up the inside, to come middle of the turn and then run it wide, where Dunge or where James came in on the very outside of the entry of the turn to come down the inside of the next lane. And then they came to that pivotal point of connection. And it was very, very similar. Probably almost, I mean, if you could overlay them, the angles were almost identical. You know, so yeah, it's not that we haven't seen it before. And obviously I know Dunge a lot of, and so does everybody else. Dunge was not that type of rock.
He never
got into things like that. Right. So, to the point of stuff happens. And just like, it's just what we saw. It was the perfect storm then. And it was the perfect storm now.
There you go. That's it for the United Motorsports moment of the night. Again, like, it's a perfect storm. I don't think there's any cut and dry of that guy was completely wrong or that guy was completely right. And we could sit here and beat it to death. But I think that's great analysis that you gave. Really good angle work. I got beat up a little bit by the Keyboard Warriors RV and saying how I needed to... you know, I said something on the broadcast to the fact that I needed to see a better angle. And the reason that I said that, well, number one, that all the Keyboard Warriors, you guys have to understand, while you're on the couch hitting rewind 100 times, we don't get that luxury because there's also a race going on that we have to call. And so I just wasn't comfortable with giving the proper analysis of who was right, who was wrong, and what happened. And at the same time, like, you know, our production crew, they're trying to show me replays, but again, there's stuff happening on the track that I got to call. And so anyhow, that's why I didn't call it the exact way that we're doing it here, because now it's Monday and we've had a million ways to look at it. So
and to dissect it. Yeah, your job is obviously, when you're calling that, is to number one call the race. And when that happens, yeah, you try to call it the best you can. But yeah, like you said, there's a race going on, and you got to get back to the action.
Right. And you just, but it was gnarly. So that's it for the United Motorsports moment of the night.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease and a whole lot of love, you transform 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. LED headlights, spoilers, whatever you need. eBay Motors has it at affordable prices. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride every time. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Want to make mom's day? Get to your Nordstrom Rack now and score amazing deals for Mother's Day, which is Sunday, May 12th. Find tons of gifts from only $30 at Nordstrom Rack. Fragrance, jewelry, luxury bags, activewear, beauty, and more. Save on Kate Spade New York, Stuart Weitzman, and Ted Baker London. Great brands, great prices. So shop your Nordstrom Rack store today and treat mom to the good stuff from just $30.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Moving along to the Dunlop. Dude, we got another hot topic, and I know you're going to tee off at this. So Dunlop due diligence segment of the show would be the red cross flags and the penalties that were assessed after Moto Race 2.
Yep.
First of all, your thoughts on that. What do you think?
Well, I mean, look, I think they ended up docking the top five, two positions for most. I believe Jason Anderson got docked four positions because it was a white flag. He jumped on the white flag, which was Red Cross, and then also the checkered, which was Red Cross. So he's four positions. We're watching the replay right now with the Red Cross out. I've seen everything that's been talked about. I know the comms. I know that, which I agree. I think that comms could be definitely something. But if you were watching right now, you see the white flag and then the static Red Cross flag, and they're coming up through the inter. Coop jumped it. AP jumps it. And everybody, as they're coming up the takeoff, they're like, did I just see what I saw? And you can see Jet doing it. He realizes what happens. Look, it's a tough scenario to be in. There was multiples that did it, right? I think we would be talking or in a different scenario if it was just one of the riders, if it was just Jet and everybody else followed suit and didn't jump. But clearly it was very hard to see because we had five of the best riders in the world miss the Red Cross flag. And as they were going up the inside there, you make that right hander, you're looking up, you're choosing your rut, right? You're coming out to figure out what jump. And then that Red Cross plus the white is way to the right. You can fault all of them because look, they all did it. It's their job to be aware of the Red Cross flag. But I do think that there could be on AMA's side, it dealt differently,
there was 16, 17 other riders that obeyed it, right? So this is what I wrote because there were things that I would for sure have forgotten. Yep. I'm like, listen, dude, as you know, a rule is a rule. Yep. Could there have been more emphasis from the flagger? Of course. Do the riders still need to be aware? Yes. Five riders were penalized. The rest of the field weren't. Bottom line, the riders have to respect the flag and be aware. And AMA could have definitely taken and made more of an effort and emphasis with the flag, for sure. You can't leave it static like that.
Yeah.
And I understand that he was trying to wave the white flag too, but they have other people that could have waved it, in my opinion. So I said that. What's the remedy? I love radio comms.
Yep.
What fires me up about this, dude, is like the radio comms, one-way communication. I've raced dirt car races with one-way communication from the officials. So if the caution's out, boom, they tell you in the caution, you slow down, you're aware. The fact that they won't even try it and they think that it might be an advantage or a distraction is frustrating to me in this day and age. It would be a huge benefit, and that we can't even get into it and like at least test it, have some riders test it or have everyone test it. It boggles my mind that it's like you can't even have a conversation about it. Like, mm-hmm. what, like What do you think of that? Does that fire you up or what?
We have discussed this before. I think that it'd be awesome. It would bring the sport to another level if we could have comms in number one practice. Hey, we're making a little change here. This is what they're doing. You know, like things like that. Everybody's got a screwdriver. Everybody's got a set of forks and a shock. It doesn't matter what motor's like. I've said this before. It doesn't matter what motorcycle it is. You can have the same exact setting on one bike versus another bike, and you might have it set up a little bit differently. So does it correlate between a KTM and a Honda or vice versa, all the other brands? No, it does not. So I don't see any advantage there. But in this particular situation, in a safety situation, like I think it would have definitely helped. And like to your point of making a bigger point of the red cross flag, it was a static red cross flag. Jet knew what lap he was on. He knew he was on last lap, checkered flag lap. Like, you know, you can see, number one, your mechanics letting you know that. You can see on the board a lot of the times in the tower in the middle of the track. These guys are very aware. They have, like, you know, they can see almost all the way around their head when they race, right? So they're aware of the situation. But I think the white flag should have been less of a priority. If the red cross flag, because the red cross flag only gets pulled when they need it, it's not like a yellow flag. They pull the yellow flag when a tough block bounces out into the track or some riders down in the turn that washed out. But right now we're seeing the red cross flag and it's just static there. That should be priority number one, and the checkered should come second or the white should come second for this instance here, right? This is what we saw. They made a priority of the static flag of the red cross being a static and just sitting there. And then they were waving the checkered way off into the way up top above it. Number one, hard to see the checkered. Also, you got the flag that you're the cross flag you're supposed to pay attention to. So, bad call. I don't know, bad call, but bad move on how they did the flag.
It was handled poorly.
Handled poorly.
Like to the rider's defense, I wrote this down too. Yeah, to the rider's defense, and you've already talked about this. I said the exact same thing you did. Is it was a difficult spot. You know, you're especially if you're coming inside, because the jump face is really ruddy, and this is a beautiful view of it. I mean, dude, you have to be focused right there, as you know. And that was a pretty big finish line with a short run up, and again, really, really ruddy. So they're focused on that. Like again, especially if you're using that inside. So I'm not trying to make an excuse for the guys. I'm just throwing it out there of why it could have easily been missed. But again, yeah, like it's not a defense for them. They still need to obey the red cross flag, which they do. And you talked about it. It was AMA could have done a way better job of emphasizing the red cross. And I'm sure they're going to make major improvements before we go to Foxborough. But dude, yeah. It's even
as far as we have, the indicator lights on the big jumps, the triples, for example. Like, well, the finish line is really no difference than the triple. The finish line also has a tower above the takeoff. So it's even easier to put a light on the front of that, or as easy to put one on a triple as it is to put it on the finish line. And I think if you would have had lights on that too, you could then say, okay, a static red cross flag, because now the lights are going off, indicators letting you know, like, hey, this is a non-jump, you know, because those indicators only come on when it's wheels on the ground. So that would have been another area where they could improve. You know, if they're not talking about going comms, they can be talking, you know, they could have lights right here or on the tower there. And they definitely would have been able to see that.
I think that if the riders haven't, like, dude, I'm going hardcore press on the comms, just because if you're a rider and you haven't used them, I recommend that you try them. They're awesome. You know, I think you'd be pleasantly surprised how it's not a distraction. It's not a safety. It's not a safety concern. And it's just crazy. It's nuts, dude. I'm gonna go off script here for the Boxo breakdown. If you haven't, check out Boxo USA, proud partners of Title 24. Check them out. We were gonna talk about Kenny had a bike issue. He had a scare. Roll that tape from behind that drone shot, Aaron. This is gnarly, dude. This is a hell of a save. Check. I'm not sure what happened. Did you hear anything of what happened here? And how was that a bike issue?
I didn't see that, but if you back it up just a little, I think he had flashes of Anaheim 2 when Honda and when he jumped off. Because if we go back just a little to him taking off in that transition, it looked like the rear tire at the last second kind of made a quick move, and he wasn't expecting that. And then he didn't know if the bike was going, and that was like that split second of like, am I jumping off or am I not? I saw him contemplating, what's happening next. And I could probably, you know, the Anaheim 2 Honda arm, when he broke his arms and that gnarly, gnarly crash, that was like a repeat. I haven't heard him say that, but knowing Kenny, and knowing, you know, even after Seattle and a few of those super, super ruddy tracks, he had said he wasn't super comfortable on, right there. It kind of looked like the bike just did a little bit of a squirm right at the bottom, and he didn't know what was going to happen. So at the split second, he's like, am I jumping off right now? And then it didn't actually kick him as hard as he thought. So now he had to get his legs back on the machine. So close, close call right there. He's like, what am I doing? And then, you know, so also, as we can see, he's got some steam rolling out of that left side of that motorcycle from the radiator. The bike made it all the way through the main event, but scary moment right there for Kenny.
So moving on, and then one more last thing for the Boxo breakdown. With the infractions and with how close the points are now, that's two weekends in a row where Cooper Webb he's only eight back, dude. He's single digits. If you're doing a deep dive and you're breaking it down, what do we got? Four rounds left.
Yep.
Let's see here. No, five rounds left, right? Because we got Foxborough, Philly, Nashville, Denver, Salt Lake. Yep. Break it down for us. What are you doing, and what is the mindset for, number one, Cooper Webb? I want to ask you that, and then I want to ask you what the mindset is for Jet.
Well, I think it's on both sides, on both parties. It's pretty straightforward. Cooper has to keep the pressure on. It went from a 21-point lead to a 16-point lead that Jet had, and now it's down to an eight because of the unfortunate first lap crash there with JB and Jet. Yep. So now he's sitting 8 points down. His job right now is to keep the pressure on and also try to get a few more of these race wins. And now if I'm Jet, having that 21 down to 16, down to eight, can't afford any more mistakes. He's got to put in, you know, in these last five races, he's got to put in clean, clean races, stay out of trouble, because now Coop's within striking distance. And I also think, you know, being that it's within 8 points, you know, as a racer, the pendulum can swing. You know, Jet had all of the momentum a few weeks ago, 2 weeks ago. It was a 21-point lead, like I said, went to a 16, now an eight. So the pendulum have kind of swung. Now I feel like, you know, if you're sitting in Coop's position, you know, you're looking at it, hey, he's had a couple bad weekends, and I'm right here now. So now it's just, if you ever have to put the pressure on, it's putting the pressure on right now and forcing him into a mistake.
Do you feel like it, because it's 8 points back? I mean, 8 points, 8 points. You'd love to have, I mean, you'd be cool with going into the final round with 8 points, definitely having a little buffer there.
Yep.
But do you feel at this stage, it's basically it's 0 points, like they could be tied?
Zero, but if you're going to the last round, you had 8 points, you're like, hey, I just need to be on the box. We have one round left. You know, I can close this thing out. But because we have five rounds left and an 8 point gap, there's a lot of points that are going to be given out over those five weekends. So, you know, once again, we've talked about it. We have some open stadiums coming up. I think actually that was our last closed stadium. So, you know, we have weather factor that could play a part into this. And being that it's that 8 points, it's so close. We're going to have some really, really good racing. Both
Dude,
of them are going to have to show up every weekend and leave it all out on the track.
That's right. Last thing before we bring in our man Levi Kitchen, the chef, cooking with some bacon grease up in here. One of the title contenders, defending champ, Chase Sexton. Did you expect more from him this weekend based on the ride that he had in Seattle? Like, we really didn't talk about him much. What do you think?
Yeah, kind of a flat weekend. I'll be, yes, to your point, a flat weekend. Triple Crown. He did get caught up in that the kind of the pile up. Second turn.
Oldenburg.
Oldenburg getting a great start. Actually the whole shot, but as you know, leading that pack into the second turn is pretty, if you haven't been in that scenario before, like he totally misjudged that triple, cased it, caused what we see right here in front of us on the replay. Chase picking his bike up, AC kind of tweaking his knee. And then here you got Oldenburg right here, just coming up way short. And then, over the bar, AC jumps kind of onto the side of him. So it was a chain reaction. But as for Chase, he needed to have a better weekend, kind of flat. I didn't hear much about, kind of what his thoughts were.
I haven't heard anything.
If it was, something to deal with the bike or just an off weekend.
That was a lot, dude, for the 450 recap. But, dude, I know I got to give you kudos for this, lining this up, and our man for coming on. I'm excited to bring this next gentleman on to Title 24. Took it to the house this weekend in St. Louis. Let's bring him on. Levi Kitchen, Monster Energy Pro Circuit Kawasaki rider.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease and a whole lot of love, you transform 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. LED headlights, spoilers, whatever you need. eBay Motors has it at affordable prices. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride every time. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Want to make mom's day? Get to your Nordstrom Rack now and score amazing deals for Mother's Day, which is Sunday, May 12th. Find tons of gifts from only $30 at Nordstrom Rack. Fragrance, jewelry, luxury bags, activewear, beauty, and more. Save on Kate Spade New York, Stuart Weitzman, and Ted Baker London. Great brands, great prices. So shop your Nordstrom Rack store today and treat mom to the good stuff from just $30.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
There he is.
What's up, guys?
My man.
How's it going, buddy?
It's going pretty good. How about you?
Oh, it's good. How was that bike ride?
Actually, I got the day off.
Oh, wow. Oh, yeah. Nice.
Yeah. So I've just been chilling on the couch, dude, drinking coffee.
Dude, heck of a job, man. Like, is it feel like pretty surreal? Like, what, you did three in a row, right? Like, you did Anaheim 2, you won that one. And then the next race was Seattle for you guys, right?
No, it went A2 and I won. And then Glendale.
Yep.
I got second at Glendale and then won Seattle.
Dang it. I messed up. Sorry about that, dude. Crap. No, it all runs together. RV, he's your boy, Pacific Northwest. I know you've been a massive fan, and you've been pulling for him. You put him on the hot seat a couple times here. I'm sure you got some stuff for him, so go for it.
Yeah, man, I just glad to have you on Title 24 for the first time. Man, I've obviously got to watch, your amateur, career coming up, securing that deal with Star Racing. Honestly, like RC had said, I was a bit critical on you at Star Racing because I know the potential that you have, being that I've spent more time with you than anybody else on the gate in this class. So I knew the potential, but it's really cool to be able to see and watch it really unfold right now. Things have got to be you know, I know the difference, but I know pro circuit very, very well, Mitch. You know, kind of explain the differences between, you know, the Star and why the success here versus over at Star.
Yeah, I think, I mean, just the side of, you know, I'm a little bit happier as far as even off the bike and also, you know, obviously on the bike, like it's a little bit of a different program. And Mitch, I don't know, it's just super relaxed over there. I mean, obviously I should have had Volan by my side. He unfortunately got hurt, but like even now just being by myself over there and everybody's just really relaxed, which is kind of the type of person I am. I'm pretty laid back. So, it's just been fun. And I think that's huge for me is just having fun. And I always knew I kind of had this potential and it's kind of weird right now. It feels like I knew this, like this point would kind of come as far as just believing in myself. And it kind of goes back to amateurs. Cause I had a time where I got beat a lot and was never really winning anything. And then once I won, it took me a couple times to win. And then I really started, I mean, you guys know how it is. Once you win, it's just like you learn how to do it. And yeah, I think that's, I'm finally learning how to do that part. And yeah, it just helps. It's like, I don't know. There's just so much confidence when I'm on the line now. And I even feel like, yeah, I ripped all the starts this weekend, which was sweet. But yeah.
Two weekends in a row, bro, actually.
Yeah, I know.
Dude, yeah. I talk about it. I talk about it on the broadcast a lot because I don't even know if you remember telling us this at Media Days in December. But you said how much at that time, how much you liked the bike and the delivery of the power off of the start. And you said that. And then you talked about how well the bike corners and how it goes where you want it to go in the corners. And it was those two things that really rung out and I had written it down. And like everything that you're doing and the results that you're getting on the start is complementing exactly what you said. And I wanted to ask you kind of like segue to this next thing with all the success and how dominant you've been, especially the last 2 weeks, dude. How much easier is it during the week, like your training or like when you go to the practice track? Is it just like 10 times more enjoyable? Like tell us and the people listening to the podcast or watching, like what that process is like during the week, just in general, compared to like when you're not winning.
Yeah, it's a lot easier, especially like taking a day off like today. You know, if I'm getting beat, it's like, you know, I sure as hell am waking up at 7:30 and going on a bike ride because I feel like I got to try to, I don't know. But yeah, when you're doing well, it's like everything is relaxed and at the practice track, it's like, I don't know. It's really easy. You just go put in your laps and you just make sure, like my goal every week now is just making sure that I go into these weekends feeling really just fresh and excited to go racing. I think that's huge. And I'm having a lot more fun at the races. Like, I think I'm just finally, you know, the nerves and all that kind of stuff, they're gone. And it's like, I can really focus. I think that's the biggest thing is my focus. And that also comes from during the week. I'm really focused during the week, but also, you know, I still do the things I enjoy and get my mind off things like, whether that's fishing or going and playing some golf or whatever the case might be. I think that's super important for me.
I the difference that I see from, you know, years past, and then even from the start of this series to currently right now, like you've established yourself to be as being the main guy. And I think you were one of the main guys coming in on paper. But to your point, like, you know, like believing in and learning how to win and taking those steps, like you've really done really well with that in the last three weekends, like watching you ride. I always say he's a finely tuned Kevin Windham. He's like your riding style a little bit more like Kevin. You know, you got that BMX kind of flow like Kevin did a little bit. And it's it's really, I don't know if pretty is the word to watch, but it's fun to watch, you know, your riding style on the track, the smooth, you're a little bit taller, a little bit lankier than probably some of the guys out there, but it works into your favor. Like I can remember we were watching Seattle and you were standing up through majority of the turns until the exit of time to sit down. And I think that, that riding style, your precision, the way you ride the motorcycle is fun to watch. You know, I was more of the hammerhead. RC, we know, is more of the hammerhead too, for sure. So being able to watch this, it's the new age. I always say it's the new age Kevin Windham is what we're watching when we watch you.
Well, I mean, I always liked K-Dub's riding style, so I'll take that all day. Then again, I wish I had a little bit of your guys's hammerhead type of riding style too, especially for like outdoors. But I think if you can have a mixture of that, man, you're a pretty deadly combo.
That's going to be, I'm looking forward to see that too. How you approach outdoors, not even necessarily how you approach, but coming off of, and let's knock on wood, hopefully this, you know, I've texted you multiple times, just keep the pressure on. You got these guys on the ropes here. You know, so just keep doing what you're doing during the week and on the weekends, but then to make that transition into outdoors, you know, because I feel like in me watching and when what I look at is that's kind of your next goal. I feel like you haven't stamped it just yet, and we won't count our chickens before they're hatched. So let's get this done. But then that next transition is establishing yourself as a contender and as a race winner and also as a championship guy for outdoors.
Yeah, for sure. I think the main goal is, like, now that I'm in the position I am in Supercross, would just be, you know, obviously championships are always the goal, but I just want to establish my name as one of the guys in the 250 class right now. And whether that brings a championship or just brings, you know, plenty of battling up front or whatever it is in outdoors, like, I just want to make sure that you know, I'm not just like a supercross only guy, obviously. I want to be good at both of them. And it's funny because I actually, we grow up riding outdoors, all of us, we never ride supercross, so I feel like I'm actually pretty good at outdoors. And then now I feel like I'm taking to the Supercross side pretty well too. So I do believe I can be just as good outdoors as I am in Supercross. So I'm looking forward to it. And I've rode a little bit outdoors on this new bike, or new for me, I should say.
Yep.
And it's pretty sweet. It handles really good. And Joe proved that, I think, the last couple rounds of outdoors last year. I mean, he did well. Oh, yeah. So.
Do you prefer Supercross, or like, what do you like better, Supercross or motocross?
Man, it's so hard. Training wise, for sure, Supercross.
It's a lot easier, a lot shorter.
Yeah, but racing wise, man, there is something about, like, if you're out front in an outdoor race and you're just seeing a gap get bigger, and you're like flowing with the track and jumping like bumps and stuff like that, there's like nothing better than that. Or even when you're just pissed off in the back getting blasted, but you're like going around people, that's pretty fun too.
That's cool. Hey, we were talking about the tracks and, you know, what makes good race tracks. And I like, take the dirt out of the equation, because St. Louis dirt is epic. We all know that. Yeah. And you could attest to that from this weekend. But did you think that this weekend, how they put those little rollers on the insides, after the one, after the triple, after the mechanics, and then you could go inside or outside before the finish, and then that back and forth section, and then that right hander before the regular triple, how you could go out and go 3-3. Did you feel like this racetrack this weekend was good for multiple lines compared to what you've raced all year?
Yeah, I mean, I think those little inside rollers for sure helped. It was tough because that dirt is so good. So luckily they put a roller like in some of those areas, because if they didn't, like for example, after mechanics area, that triple, with the way that dirt is, if there was no roller on the inside, that inside would have been faster no matter what, what way you do it. Or, you know, I think on a like, it just, it has to, I think the dirt had a lot to do with that. Like, it for sure made it race better. Now, if they put those rollers in at, let's say at Glendale or something like that, it's, you're not going to see guys probably use them much. You're just going to be fighting for traction. So,
yeah.
I did think the track raced well. It still somehow was, well, I never had to deal with it, luckily, but it, watching the racing, like that first moto, I was glad I could get around Juju quick because I knew what was going to happen. And sure enough, like for the first four laps, I was looking back and it was a freight train.
Yep.
Behind him. So, I don't know if that's because, yeah, I don't really know why the tracks are that way. And that might've been because it was the first main two. So the track, there wasn't many passing options.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know, the tracks, you know, it's always hard. I think everybody's getting so damn good that it's like, they say the tracks are hard to pass, but also people are just all going pretty damn fast. So
pretty fast. Yeah. And I felt like watching this, this track, the way the layout was, just like we're watching you go over the triple right there, like the track had a lot more speed everywhere. And part of that was because of the traction, how much traction, the lean angles you're able to do, the lines you're able to take because of the traction, but also just the track in general, compared to what we've seen the past of this season, is this track just was more racy. You could push harder. The track didn't break down as much. They weren't, you know, foot peg deep ruts everywhere. Like, you could maneuver and change lines and go multiple places on the track. Also do it while carrying lots of speed, which I don't think we've seen a track like this that we had, you know, I think the speed through the rhythm sections and across the start straights.
Yeah, for sure. I think, like you said, the crazy part about this track is like, you could take any of those flat turns and open them up. And I watched Chase do it a couple times, like before the finish line. The traction that people, I mean, you could just cut it like however you wanted to, where, you know, other stadiums, like you wouldn't be able to do that kind of stuff. Before the triple by mechanics area, like I think a normal racetrack, you'd have to kind of use the berm maybe, or at least be easy on the throttle. I mean, you could pretty much hold it wide open on the flat stuff around that.
Yeah.
So, I think I'm a fan of, you know, a lot of people have been saying the track's been really soft, and they have been, but, you know, luckily we're seeing a lot of people are still healthy, and I like when they get rutted just for my sake. Like, I thought Seattle, you know, I don't know. I like when it's like that. You got to be really smart, and I'm not a huge fan.
I'm telling
of,
you, like, it's that Kevin Windham style, bro. Just nice and easy, light and fast. Doesn't look like he's trying to go too fast, but he's hauling ass.
Yeah, like that's why at Glendale, I was so happy to get set in. I mean, I lucked into a second. Like Jordan, you know, when he landed on me and crashed, like that was, if I'm being honest, that was Jordan's night to win. He was faster than all of us by a good amount. But when the tracks are like that, I stress because, like, I don't like going wide open. And, yeah, I need something to kind of be technical, I guess you could say.
Dude, speaking of that, the red flag or the red cross flag controversy, that second moto in the 450s. And you're watching, I'm sure you're watching, and it goes back to, we talked about this, RV, on the show. Remember when you had that red cross situation in Glendale, going back to Glendale, and we haven't, I haven't talked to you about it, like uncertainty of like, and I know, listen, dude, I know you can't get yourself in hot water with the AMA. You can't have them pissed at you because you might need a favor from them someday. But what, like, and you're, in your mind, because you're racing, RV and I are just sitting here on the couch giving our expertise. But what, like, put, like, what, explain to our viewers and our listeners what would have been the difficult part of that, or what could they have done better in your mind? Like,
was it hard to see where they were? Like,
yeah, like, tell us, walk us through that. Like, dude, they should have done this. Can, like, walk us through what you think they should have done.
For the 450 class this weekend?
Yeah. Like the Red Cross, yeah.
I really think that, honestly, on a checkered flag, situation like that, it's so hard to, I mean, they're going to go to the rule book, obviously, but I don't 100% agree with it. I mean, it's straight out of a 180, and you're pretty much, when you exit that 180, all the guys were going inside. I mean, you're up the face, like,
yep.
And it's almost such a dangerous instant, or, you know, situation where, like, I know a couple of the 450 guys said, like, by the time they saw it, if they would have backed out, well, you would have had multiple freaking red cross flags at that point, because
yeah, totally, you're going to be
facing right into that finish line. So, I think the only, you know, solution of that would have been, like, the guy would have had to have really got that flag out in front of where,
yes,
you know, you can tell on the left side of the screen right now, like, all the ruts where the people were actually, jet somehow got over to the right more, but that flag needed to either be waved more, or maybe, I don't know if there's a light set up for the, no, it looks like there's not.
No, there's
there needs
not
to be maybe lights on the finish line.
Well, and that's what I had said. They could do lights, and also they're making a priority of waving the white flag. Well,
yeah,
as racers and as everybody that's seen these red cross flags, like, the priority is the rider on the ground. That's why the red cross flag only gets pulled out when they need it. That's what the yellow flag is for. The yellow flag's for when the tough blocks get pulled out on the track, somebody washes out and turn, you know, like, nobody's at in any danger, where clearly they thought Vince or whoever the Moto Concepts guy was on the ground in between the jump, that was a dangerous situation. So make a priority of using that red cross flag for that danger situation. Make it a priority. Wave that thing. Don't wave the white flag, and that the white flag's a priority, especially in that scenario there, because it's all a judgment scenario there. It's a judgment based on AMA and the guys watching. There was no real race. Jet had a big lead. It wasn't like it came down to the wire like it did at Seattle, where it was Chase and Coop coming down, fighting for the last inch of the track, and then all of a sudden checkered flag. Jet had a lead. They should have made a priority with the Red Cross. That's my opinion.
I agree. And, I mean, I know they probably didn't think about this much, but, like, in that situation, you can see where Vince is. There's 22 of the best guys on a dirt bike out there in the class. And if they would have just not put any flags, everybody's going to jump the finish line.
Yes.
And you're not even going to come close to Vince. I mean, you'd have to have something crazy happen to.
Yeah, you can see him right there. Like,
the screen, he's standing, right? Dude. He's standing up.
Yeah.
I mean, look at his bike. It's actually inside of the tough blocks and the tower. His motorcycle is technically off the track. And I bet you where Vince is standing is up against the tough blocks. So I think it was a bad judgment call on AMA's part to have the flag just stationary.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hey, Levi, real quick, dude, are you for radio comms or not for radio comms, bro?
You're talking, like, in a
in
helmet?
Your ear, yeah.
Yeah, like, I could tell you, like, hey, dude, look out. This guy's crashed. Like, go to the right here.
Or a perfect scenario, we're talking red cross flag. Don't jump the finish line. He comes on. Yeah. You have it's a custom earpiece made, goes in. I mean, NASCAR, every car sport has it.
I would actually be – I'm for it. Like, I would want to try it. I went and rode with Osborne not long ago. And he trains.
Yeah, he likes it.
Chambers.
He
likes it. So he's got all of his guys, and it was pretty cool. Like, you know, I could hear him talking to them. They're out there doing their laps. Like, hey, try this line. Try this line. And, like,
exactly.
Man, it would be pretty fun, and it would just I feel like it'd level up the racing too, because would have somebody. Oh yeah, because your mechanic's gonna see, or somebody up in the stands will then relay your mechanic. Yeah, hey, so-and-so is doing this rhythm, or hey, you need to switch to jump into the whoops. Like, yeah, we get pit boards, but it's tough sometimes to always know exactly what they're talking about on a pit board.
Yeah.
Hey, RV, I think it's kind of dangerous. It could be a hazard to have those mechanics out there on the racetrack. So you get radio comms, you get the mechanics way off the track. They'd be a lot safer, right, where they could just radio to their rider. Levi, that was a... Too. That's right. Right, Levi, that was a 50.5. Doing good, bud. Psh, yeah. That easy, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know.
Maybe they got to get the Monster Girl to have one too, so she can get off the track.
I don't know. It never happened that quick before.
Oh man.
Do you so we got you guys had the showdown in Nashville. Then you have so you guys have Denver and then Salt Lake. So three more, right?
Yep. Yeah, Nashville, Denver, Salt Lake.
Do you are any of those races or is there one that you like more than the other? Like or do you like them all?
I mean, I'm good with all of them. I want to, you know, like I would be, obviously my eyes are set on Nashville. That's the next one. But I really, like my focus is really on Nashville. I want to win Nashville really bad. You know, you race both coasts and I feel like that would be a pretty big statement. Especially, you know, I don't look too much into Salt Lake, like, obviously that would be huge to win too, but it's one of those things like when it comes down to Salt Lake, I'm going to do whatever it is I can do to wrap up a championship, you know, if I'm in that position. So yeah, Nashville is just one of those, like I want to just go win and I think that would be huge for my confidence, especially going into outdoors and man, I know Nashville is going to be super important like any other race, but yeah, I got to keep getting these starts like I am. I think that would be huge there.
Mm-hmm. Sweet.
So,
well, RV, you good? You got anything else for the dude?
I'm good, buddy.
And you got a couple weekends off. Good job, Levi. Thank you for coming on and joining RV here on Title 24. And you've done great, dude. It's cool to see, like you and RV talked about, you know, you have incredible bike skill. It's cool to see that and to finally, you know, get over that hump and perform to the level that we all know that you were able or capable of performing at. So, it's been fun to watch your progression, dude, especially, with Mitch. Mitch is an iconic, team owner. He's an icon of the sport. So, it's cool to see, dude. I'm pumped for you.
Well, thank you very much. Yeah. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, buddy.
Yeah.
This is pretty fun. I'll do it whenever you guys want. So.
All right. I appreciate the insight too with the red flags and the comms and all that stuff. And dude, go enjoy your day off. You deserve it. Catch a big old bass. I'm going to do that too this afternoon and I'll send you some pictures. And again, we appreciate you coming on and we'll see you in Nashville, big dog.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease and a whole lot of love, you transform 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. LED headlights, spoilers, whatever you need. eBay Motors has it at affordable prices. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride every time. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Want to make mom's day? Get to your Nordstrom Rack now and score amazing deals for Mother's Day, which is Sunday, May 12th. Find tons of gifts from only $30 at Nordstrom Rack. Fragrance, jewelry, luxury bags, activewear, beauty, and more. Save on Kate Spade New York, Stuart Weitzman, and Ted Baker London. Great brands, great prices. So shop your Nordstrom Rack store today and treat mom to the good stuff from just $30.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Dude, perfect, right?
Oh, yeah. You know, I think
it's, I like it's, that, dude.
It's really cool to see. You know, I think the one, you know, the not typical. I think Levi's 23 years old now, right? So,
yeah,
he was a late bloomer when it came to, you know, his amateurs, and then even when he got hired at Star and now at PC. So, yeah, he had what was it about? You know, one rough year, two rough years at Star, but showed very good potential. And I think being that he is 23 years old now, you know, the puzzle got put together, I think, quicker than potentially like somebody like that comes up that's 18 years old. You know, the maturity level of of Levi's, say, let's just use Deegs, for example, like 18 versus 23. As everybody knows, like an 18-year-old and a 23-year-old, there's a big maturity gap there. So it's really cool to be able to see that. It's not the typical way, right? Like that's most of these kids come right out of Loretta Lynn, 16, 17-year-old, boom, you're in. If you're the guy, you're into a factory team, and you're on your way. Levi was, kind of one of the I don't want to say the last guys hired, but he wasn't first roster pick. And now to see him kind of get his feet wet, struggle those that year or two over at Star, and then just come out swinging, you know. And I think that's cool to see that at 23.
Yeah. Going to be interesting to see the rest of the series. But thanks again, Levi, for coming on.
RC, real quick, I think between the two of us, you have 38 PC wins over at Pro Circuit. I have 30. Right. So we have about a quarter of the race wins. And now we have coming up on this next weekend, Levi could make it 300 wins for Pro Circuit. So, and Mitch. So pretty crazy to think that he has that many wins. One guy does, one team.
Dude. Yeah. Incredible. Congratulations, Mitch. And everyone. It takes a team and a crew. Especially back in my day, I go to Jimmy Perry and Bones, and my mechanic at the time. Thank you so much for everything that you guys did for me and believing in me and signing me up to race for your team. I was that's all I ever wanted to do. Kind of like you, RV, is ride for you, Mitch. So congratulations. Because you will get 300 wins, and that'll be phenomenal. You always gave it 110% for me, and I wouldn't be where I am without all of your insight and your hard work. So congratulations, definitely, on behalf of myself, to you, Mitch.
Yeah, that's right. No, he's like a father figure to me now. So it's good to see. It's good to be a part of that, or even to be able to witness that 300 wins, and then to go back and look and say, hey, me and RC here, we account for about a quarter of them bad boys.
Yeah, got lucky a few times, didn't we, brother? That's right. That's right. We win. Mitch and my dad would always say, well, we got lucky again this weekend, right?
So yeah, that's right.
He's a bad dude. He's a bad dude. All right, Quadlock question of the week. Check out quadlockcase.com. They make great stuff. I use everything that they got. I mean, screen protectors, cases, mounts for my adventure bikes, my bicycles, you name it, they got it. Check them out. Quadlock question of the week. We have a winner of Quadlock question of the week, and it's Thompson 575. Okay, Thompson 575 asks, what was the most adversity either you had to overcome in your title years, either of you had to overcome in your title years? For me personally, it was 2003, basically all of Supercross season, especially the latter part of the season, where I knew that I was going to get beat by Chad 100% unless he fell down. And my bike was less than spectacular. Not an excuse. It just wasn't where I thought that it needed to be. I hated going practicing every day, and I just I had to go each weekend and at least get second. And I knew I wasn't going to win unless something happened. And just, I go back through and I think of my career outside of injuries and things of that nature, that, that's always, you're always fighting adversity when you have injuries, but the adversity of just being uncomfortable and not being an ideal situation, and that forcing me to have to perform. It wasn't fun. I hated racing. I hated going to the races. I hated practicing. Only thing I really liked doing was training off the bike. So that for me, RV, was 100% some of the toughest adversity outside of injuries. And the mental strength that I had to have to keep my mind somewhat right and be positive and look at the positive sides to get the best result that I could possibly yield on the weekend was 2003 Supercross for me.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, kind of similar to that was, I think it's 2011. There's the two instances. The instance of what myself and Dunge with Suzuki, and I won a ton of first motos, and I could not win a second moto to save my life. We had the motorcycle, to your point, wasn't where it needed to be. But we knew that. So my only option was to try to win every first moto and hope for either a mistake or a bad start from Dunge and me a great start the second moto. But the motorcycle just beat me to pulp in the second races. And I lost a lot of second motos to Dunge until I think it was Unadilla, we ended up, getting the new frame homologation rule and all of that. And that was my first 1-1 of the season. And that kind of changed my whole trajectory in that outdoors. But also go back to Jacksonville, not qualifying for a main event. I think I had a 25-point lead going into Jacksonville. It was a right-hand first turn. They hadn't ran a right-hand first turn in I don't know how many years, 20 plus so. And I did not make the main. I tore up my right above my eye, like in my retina. I tore like a little blind spot in my eye when I crashed and didn't make the main event. So coming back from that, going from a 25-point lead, roughly, and luckily Trey Kennard won that night as I'm driving home from Jacksonville, back home to Claremont, Florida. We're listening. James crashed out and made the main event, but crashed out in the first turn, same spot I did. And then Chad didn't end up winning. Trey ended up winning. And that right there, as everybody knows, Chad, when he smells blood in the water, there's nobody better than him.
No one ever.
That down. Yeah.
In the sport.
Yeah, no, for sure. And so Trey was able to win. And I think that right there kept me with a 3-point lead. And I was able to win, obviously, at the end of the season, win the championship. But don't know if it would end up the same if Chad would have had those extra 3 points, and then the tide would have totally changed mentally and physically for Chad.
Wow, man. So, dude, that's some good stuff. And that's why Thompson 575, thanks for your question. Slide into the Title 24 Instagram page, direct message, and JH will put you in contact with Quadlock to get you set up. So make sure when you get your stuff, I'm sure that you will like it, post about it. And and most importantly, again, thanks for being fans of a fan of Title 24. We have a dual winner for a Quadlock case question of the week. And I love this. I get chewed up every weekend, but this came at a great time for me to just ignite on these fools. Hunter Lawrence chimes in for the Quadlock question of the week. And he asks, why do keyboard warriors have 100% rating of not knowing anything they are talking about?
Yeah. It's the world we live in, guys. I see a lot of that, gibberish that comes across, and some of it has some merit to it, and majority of it doesn't. What is blows me away in reading comments and reading some of the, and what we have to do now is we have to go back and read these things for Title 24, for the show, for the information. So we know when we get on here, we do know what we're talking about, or we don't miss anything, I should say. And you go through and you get to read some of those, comments, and it's bizarre how they come across in how much they think they know, or, they know the back end of how the TV production's done, or the writer, or what he should have done here, what he should have done there. It's sometimes hard for myself and URC to break this down, and we might have to watch a video 3 or 4 times to be able to pick it all out. And we've done this our entire life, and we're the best in the world at it. And sometimes we have to analyze something for 5, 10, or, however many times we have to watch that video. So I think that all them keyboard warriors, they need to give way more respect for every one of those riders out on the gate,
Oh, 100%. This one guy was teeing off at me. I'm trying to get on X right here, but this is what this is what fires me up about keyboard warriors is how they think they know what I'm thinking. Right, dude. If there's one thing that just is one of my biggest pet peeves is when I hear someone think that they know how, think they know what I'm thinking, like they're in, like they are my brain, right?
Yeah.
And this one person was like, "Oh, dude, you're so bummed about it." Was Eli? If he got on the podium, he surpassed my podium.
Oh yeah.
And like Lee was telling me about it, I knew we were going to talk about it because we talked about it Friday. Friday night of things and topics of, hey, this could happen. And so I'm like, okay, frick, awesome. Well, I get this one guy on here and he's just blasting me about, dude, you're just mad because your records are going down. And let me be clear. I do not care who breaks my records. Do you care who breaks your records, RV? Is it going to change your life? How you live your life?
Half of my records, I don't know that I have.
That's what I'm saying, dude. And it's just like this guy's, he's telling me that I'm bummed in the way that I act. I'm like, dude, you don't know how I feel. You don't know like what I'm thinking. I don't give a damn who beats my records. Who cares? I'm pumped with what I accomplished. Made great money in my career. Get to do what I love to do. I'm hanging out here with you talking about it. And it's just, it just drives me bonkers, dude.
Yeah.
And so, yeah. Hunter is right. Like I don't know that it's 100%, but a lot of them don't know. Yeah. They don't know what we're thinking or what we,
no, they don't. It's just like to the stats, to your point of like, oh, Eli's going to break your record or whatever. Like, I mean,
cool.
I had 30 wins at PC. I didn't know that you had, or 31 or whatever it was. And you have 38 wins. I didn't know that. I don't know if you knew that.
I didn't know it either.
You know what I mean? So, yeah, they get on their high horse a bit sometimes, and I just they need to give the guys and the whole sport the benefit of the doubt or the respect.
Respect.
It's not gonna be perfect all the time. You know, if Bondo makes a bad call here, or Ricky, you say this or whatever, these are all live things happening as we're sitting there watching it, just like you're watching it on TV. Half of you guys can't even hold your beer and eat a Cheeto while watching the race. Well, now Ricky's doing, you know, commentating, broadcasting, pulling that, the highlights, the this, the that, the crash. There's a lot of things going on for,
oh dude,
I've only done a little part of it. For the fans that are listening, I've only done a little part of it. I've been on the production side a little bit with RDL, which isn't even, you know, it's not live broadcast. It's not live TV. And there's a lot of stuff that goes on in the back end, but, got to give Hunter a big shout out for his first podium in that 450 class.
Dude, I didn't even know if he was going to ride, because he hurt himself in practice, believe it or not. He pulled off and he didn't even finish practice, and then he comes out and he podes. So yeah, hell of a job. Thanks for the question, Hunter. We appreciate the engagement. RV and I do. I'm glad you're tuned in, and yeah, you know, another thing too about like the keyboard warriors is like, they don't even know who we are, right? They don't even know who we are. Like I guarantee you, we would have more in common with these folks than they
yeah.
think.
Yeah. Think they know what they see on TV, but that is not who we are actually as a person, right?
Hey. Like, they ain't seeing us on a Sunday on the boat or
having
some cocktails together, enjoying ourselves, right?
Yeah.
All right. Hey, what do you got? That's it. We appreciate everybody. Before, let me thank the sponsors before we say goodbye. UnitedMotorsports.com. United Motorsports. Thank you very much for you guys. Quad Lock Case, Boxo USA, Dunlop Tires. We've got some great partners, and we appreciate you guys. We appreciate all of our fans. Make sure you check us out at Motorsports on NBC's YouTube page. We're always live and on demand on Peacock. That's where you can watch us. And of course, we're on all of the iPod or the podcast applications. So you can listen to us there. Keep the questions coming. We're going to answer a lot of questions next week on next week's episode, since there's no race. So we got a bunch in the can there.
Rapid fire.
That's it. You know what we're going to do? I'm doing you're going to laugh your tail off when you hear this. It's for a good charity. So this, I agreed to do a, a charity tennis tournament for the Big Bend Hospice, benefiting Big Bend Hospice. And I'm doing that Friday and Saturday morning. I suck at anything other than I even suck at riding a dirt bike these days. But yeah, so I got a couple lessons this week. I had a lesson last week. I sucked so bad. Oh. It was going like out of the tennis court, and I'm just like, oh my gosh, why did I do that? So you play tennis?
I do not play tennis. No, never have. It's a lot harder than it looks. I know that.
What about golf?
Yeah, I might swing the clubs every now and then, but I'm not like all these other boys out there that that actually kind of know. My goal is to not lose a whole box of balls when I go. That's my
goal. Do you have cold beer when you golf?
I'll have beers or a cocktail. You know, I like to go out and if I go golfing, it is not to go golfing. It is to have some time with the boys and talk a lot of smack, because really that's the only thing I'm good at is talking smack, especially with a little lubrication involved. I'm really good at talking smack and not so good at swinging the club.
Is Rich Lane good at golf?
I've never golfed with Richie. We're gonna have to do that one time and see.
What do you got going this week?
This week, not so much. Pretty mellow week. I'm starting to ramp up here. Got some Blue Crew stuff coming up, Blue Crew races. Actually, might be heading over to Isle of Man TT to check that out.
Sweet.
Yeah, it's the summers are busy. I'm just like you, so it's good to get a little bit of downtime right now.
Yeah, same. I'm not doing much either other than that tennis tournament. I'll ride my bicycle. The weather's supposed to be pretty good, so I'll get in some long rides and try not to injure myself playing tennis for a good cause. All right. Well, everybody, thanks again for tuning in. Levi, thanks for coming on again. And RV, have a great week. And we will see you next Monday, party people.
Want to make mom's day? Get to your Nordstrom Rack now and score amazing deals for Mother's Day, which is Sunday, May 12th. Find tons of gifts from only $30 at Nordstrom Rack. Fragrance, jewelry, luxury bags, activewear, beauty, and more. Save on Kate Spade New York, Stuart Weitzman, and Ted Baker London. Great brands, great prices. So shop your Nordstrom Rack store today and treat mom to the good stuff from just $30.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.